Good morning. I wish to greet each one in Jesus' name this morning. I wish to welcome you here. It's a good day. It's another Sunday. It's another time when we've blocked out this 2 hour, 3 hour segment of time in our scheduled active lives. And I was sitting here this morning thinking about that it's a positive thing for us to block out some time to stop, to sit, to read, to sing, to pray, to think. And so whether you do this regularly here or whether you regularly do this elsewhere and are just here this morning, I believe it's a good thing. In some ways, I don't feel like I don't have anything here that's new to share. It's not some new gospel. It's actually a very old gospel. Turn in your Bibles to Matthew 9. I'm going to read some verses here to introduce the subject, introduce the title. Matthew 9:35. This is talking about Jesus. We're going to read through verse 8 of chapter 10. Just a snapshot of, this is a happening. Matthew 9:35, "And Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues and preaching the gospel of the kingdom and healing every sickness and every disease among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, because they fainted and were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Then saith he unto his disciples, The harvest truly is plenteous, but the laborers are few. Pray ye therefore the Lord of the harvest, that he will send forth laborers into his harvest. And when he had called unto him his 12 disciples, he gave them power against unclean spirits to cast them out, and to heal all manner of sickness and all manner of disease." Now the names of the 12 apostles are these: Simon, and he lists them through verse 4. "These 12 Jesus sent forth, and commanded them, saying, Go not into the way of the Gentiles, and into any city of the Samaritans enter ye not, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as ye go, preach, saying, The kingdom of heaven is at hand. Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out devils. Freely ye have received, freely give." So that was words of Christ in a very real time and place. But verse 36 of chapter 9 introduces the title that I have on the top of my notes here. "But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them." Compassion. And this, what I have for a title here, is a question. To the Christian, is compassion optional? Is compassion optional? Now that's going to, and so this morning I'd like to go through some of these things. What is compassion? How has compassion been demonstrated? How does it work? What does it look like? And then we'll loop around to that question, is it optional? So, if I were to ask several of you to stand up and give what you see, what in your mind comes up as a dictionary type definition for compassion, how would you put that down? Mercy. I'll give you a hint in my study as I've looked at some of these terms and what they are. Mercy is the withholding of a punishment, but that's going to happen. That's what comes next. Compassion is not mercy. Mercy happens because of compassion. Compassion is closer to pity. Webster's dictionary says sorrow or pity aroused by the suffering or misfortune of another. So when you feel pity or sorrow because you observe suffering, that's compassion. Now, if you go into the Greek and Hebrew, actually in both of those languages, this thing of compassion, well, what I just said about sorrow or pit or pity, those are very surface things. You see the cat smashed on the road that's still suffering. That's a very superficial, it's in your face, you just don't like to see that. The Hebrew and Greek, both of those languages, the word that was translated compassion is not so much of a superficial or superfluous or outside thing, but rather more of a gut feeling. Compassion is something that's almost more built in. Compassion being something that's, well, you could call it a way of life. the gut feeling of your obligation to help when you see a need. How is, or was, or has been, have you seen compassion demonstrated? Demonstrations of compassion. Have you seen one? God the Father is kind of where this starts. And incidentally, if you read through the Bible, or if you go pull up a concordance, use a concordance and pull up the word compassion, it's actually a word that's used quite a bit in Scripture. And a lot of them, especially in the Old Testament, Psalms, God is often described as, I mean, that word is used to describe God the Father. It's also called one of God's virtues. In other words, it's part of what makes him up. But this is made evident through God's acts in history on the behalf of his people, the covenant people. And if you let your mind, well, actually, I was going to read a few verses from Exodus. This goes way back. Exodus 3, verse 7 and 8, God had a people that he made a covenant with. God made a covenant with Abraham. We know that story. Abraham's walking. Abraham's following God. You have Isaac, Jacob. There was a covenant made with Abraham, but these covenant people, God was tracking them. God was following them. The story of Joseph, God providing. And now you have Abraham's what? Great-grandchildren. The sons of Jacob. We also call them the children of Israel. Exodus 3, 7 and 8. And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people which are in Egypt, and have heard their cry by reason of their taskmasters. For I know their sorrows, and I am come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians, and to bring them up out of that land unto a good land, and a large, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. The word compassion isn't really used in that sentence, but that's what compassion is. The taking note of someone in a problem, in a predicament, in a difficulty, in a hard spot, and moving to remedy that. Later on, then, these people, these children of Israel, were in the desert. Psalm 78, verses 35 to 39. These are demonstrations now of God's compassion to his covenant people. This is talking about the people of Israel now. Psalm 78, 35. And they remembered that God was their rock, and the high God their redeemer. Nevertheless, they did flatter him with their mouth, and they lied unto him with their tongues, for their heart was not right with him, neither were they steadfast in his covenant. But he, being full of compassion, forgave their iniquity, and destroyed them not. Yea, many a time turned he his anger away, and did not stir up all his wrath, for he remembered that they were but flesh, a wind that passeth away, and cometh not again. That's part of a song, part of a psalm, someone writing about what had happened in the wilderness, these people that were complaining or murmuring, and anyway. But God's view of them, compassion, he forgave their iniquity. On up currently. That's Old Testament. That's 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 years ago. What about today? Is God a compassionate God still? Well, for us today, I would say the answer to that is yes. Romans 5:8. Common verse. Verse you've heard often. But God commendeth his love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. There again, it doesn't say that God was compassionate. But God provided salvation. We were in the pinch. We were in need. We were unable to help ourselves. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. In this thing of compassion and the concept, 2,000 years ago, God sent Jesus Christ. We read here from Matthew 9, and this is the account of 2,000 years ago when God sent His Son to earth. And there are numerous, if you stop and think about that, there are numerous parts of that story that are demonstrations, that are compassion demonstrated by Jesus Christ here on earth. One, there was a certain amount of compassion bundled up in His agreement to come. Jesus' agreement, I guess, agreement with the Father. Yes, I'll go. Jesus Christ came. Jesus Christ lived as a man. Something He wouldn't have needed to do. But something that He did for our good. And then while Christ was here, He taught. He taught this thing of compassion. The classic parable, or the classic time when he got in people's faces and said, and now this is how this really happened, or no, I guess it was a parable, a certain man. The story of the Good Samaritan. We could turn to read that, but I don't think we will. We know the story. Jesus told it. The man fell among thieves. He's wounded. He's laying on the side of the road. He needed help. People who could have helped didn't. But one eventually, the Samaritan, had compassion, had pity. And if your mind is like mine, your mind thinks four times as fast as I can talk. Your mind, I'm sure, darts to try to put yourself in one or the other of those positions. And it's easy for us to pull up in our mind a time when somebody drove by on the other side of the road. And actually I was in the middle of thinking about this topic, this subject. When I passed by on the other side, there was a pretty violent crash on Peoria Road yesterday afternoon, or morning. It was about noon, I don't know, somewhere right around there. I didn't stop. Actually, I was ready to leave the driveway and opted to follow the paramedics that were headed out. I didn't think I could be of much assistance. The people with the medical gear were hurrying toward the car to do what they could. But I thought about this. I thought about compassion. I thought about human suffering. There was definitely human suffering going on. It wasn't real long later, and a helicopter landed on Peoria Road, took somebody to a hospital. But as humans, we understand that when we see someone in need, that arouses pity, that arouses compassion. Why did it affect Christ this way? This is changing just a little bit. Let's go back to a little bit more theory. when Jesus Christ, back here to Matthew 9, 30, 35, 36, when Jesus saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them. Why was that? How and why? What was going on? I mean, Jesus was moved with compassion, but in the adult, actually, this is this is a little bit of a bunny trail. The question was raised in the adult Sunday school class. And for those of you who weren't in the adult Sunday school class here, you get lost, I guess. But the adult Sunday school class, the story was Jesus healing a dumb man, then being accused of, you're doing that with the devil's power. And then he went into a discourse explaining some of that. No, it wasn't. I wasn't casting out devils by the devils. But why was he accused of that? Brother TJ tabled that question. with these thoughts in my mind, the reality was I saw in that Sunday school lesson a lack of compassion. In other words, the people who accused Christ of doing it by devilish means were obviously looking more at how it was going to mess up their program than the help that the dumb man was getting. The fact that the man who couldn't speak could speak again. That's some of why. But Jesus here, Matthew 9, he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion on them, and it gives us some hints here, some clues, because they fainted. Now, I don't think that was a physical, literal fainting. I don't think he's talking about a medical condition. He's talking about multitudes who were fainting. If you look into those words a little more, which I don't profess to be a Greek scholar, but some of these words have some interesting definitions. One of the things that, okay, they're fainting. The fainting of the people. I think he was seeing that spiritually they were fainting. Desamparadas is a word in another language, another translation. Spanish word, actually. Has more to do with just, their lights snuffed out. They were just put out. Their lights were going out. Jesus was seeing them as a people. They were lost in sin. They were following a program. They were following a religion that was missing. That was missing Him. That was missing God. The condition of humanity due to sin. That's what Jesus was looking at. Due to sin, because of sin, humanity, the multitude that He was looking at, was in a bad condition. They were scattered abroad. And then another one, as sheep having no shepherd. So what is he seeing there? He's seeing the people that were faint. They didn't know where they were going. They had been, in another place uses the lost lamb type of analogy. In the bushes. They were scattered abroad. The scattered abroad, it could mean that. It can also carry the context or the connotation more of being thrown, not just scattered as in scared and ran every direction, but rather cast down, actually intentionally manhandled, thrown onto the ground. That's what Jesus was seeing, and that was from their. From their not understanding God. They had no shepherd. They were not following the God of Israel, even though they thought they were. Jesus was there. It's interesting. This writer, Matthew writing this down, He was moved with compassion. They fainted, were scattered abroad as sheep having no shepherd. Jesus was the true shepherd. He was their true Savior. So it was that condition. He was looking at people in that condition. And then he said, basically, the harvest truly is plenteous. He said, all right, boys, enough of this. The harvest is here. Here's the hurting people. It's time to get to work. How does compassion work? in your mind, in your life today, how does compassion work? Is compassion a motivator for you? I'm going to read a definition here. This is from W.L. Walker on an article on compassion. W.L. Walker, written in 1915. Compassion begins with the cultivation of a sensitivity to human need. Four areas: material, psychological, social, and spiritual. The compassionate Christian is committed to using his resources to meet these needs. He acts instinctively, not stopping to count the cost, not questioning if the one in need is deserving. However, he is realistic enough to know he will often misinterpret the need, be rebuffed by the object of his compassion, be rebuked by a secular society, and never attain the goals of his culture. It is evident that compassion, like other Christian virtues, is a high goal. Few people consistently attain it. Compassion reaching the various aspects of life. And as we looked at Jesus and his walking through life, there were times he looked at a multitude like this. He sent his disciples out. He said, there's a whole bunch here to do. Other times, Jesus, well, like the adult Sunday school class, it seems like he was in a situation where he healed one person. What about the rest of the people in the country? I really think, that has come to my mind numerous times. So we think about Jesus walking in Israel 2,000 years ago, healing some of the people. What about the rest of them? What were they supposed to think? Well, they missed the boat. They weren't at the right place at the right time. Not sure how to put that all together. But I think it's pretty... I think from the New Testament, we get the picture that there weren't very many people that actually came into Jesus' presence, got in His face, asked, and were turned away. He pretty much took care of what was in front of Him to do. I think that's a clue for us. The flip side, what does a lack of compassion look like? Where would you turn in the Bible to demonstrate or think about a lack of compassion? Now, I already referred to the story of the Good Samaritan, and there was one Good Samaritan that helped the man in the ditch. There were the other guys who just kept going. But a lack of compassion, actually, if we engage in an activity that is short of compassion, we'll probably remember that later. Genesis 42, now I'm jumping clear back to the beginning of the Bible. Genesis 42, the story of Joseph, Joseph's brothers. Let me read you a few verses here. Genesis 42, 18 to 22. This is a snippet. You've read it. You've heard it often enough. This is Joseph talking to his brothers. And Joseph said unto them the third day, "This do and live, for I fear God. If ye be true men, let one of your brethren be bound in the house of your prison. Go ye, carry corn for the famine of your houses, but bring your youngest brother unto me. So shall your words be verified, and ye shall not die." And they did so, and they said one to another, "We are verily guilty concerning our brother, in that we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us, and we would not hear. Therefore is this distress come upon us." And Reuben answered them, saying, Spake I not unto you, saying, Do not sin against the child, and ye would not hear. Therefore, behold, also his blood is required. This is a group of men, a group of brothers, who had pulled a fast one quite a few years before. They were asked, well, we saw the anguish of his soul when he besought us and we would not hear. They were specifically asked for mercy. They were specifically asked to get me out of this pit. Pull me up out of here. I'm not sure what the words used were, but the thought is there. He was held in a pit. He was sold. This is talking about Joseph. These men who were engaged in the activity of saying, we don't care. That's a stark demonstration of the lack of compassion. I'm not sure how many years later that was. Probably 20, 30, 40 years later, they still remembered it. So compassion. Thinking about compassion, compassion as an attribute of God, as one of God's virtues. As a Christian, you as a Christian, we are to be Christ-like. We are to be God-like. So I'm back to this question, compassion. For the Christian, is it optional? Is it optional? And I would kind of add to that, is it automatic? Just because I'm here, just because I grew up in this community and I'm part of this church, I am a compassionate person. Is that an accurate statement? I don't think it's quite that easy. I really think it's going to take some intentional moves, some intentional choices. Turn to Matthew 25. We're in Matthew 9. Let's go to Matthew 25. I'm going to read a section here. Matthew 25:31. I'm going to read the last half of this chapter, or the last part of this chapter, and you think about compassion and those questions. Is it automatic? This is Jesus talking. This is Jesus talking / being prophetic. He's actually talking about out into the future. When the Son of Man shall come in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then shall He sit upon the throne of His glory. And before Him shall be gathered all nations, and He shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from his goats. And He shall set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats on the left. Then shall the King say unto them on His right hand, Come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick, or in prison, and came unto thee? And the King shall answer and say unto them, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it, unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Then shall he say also unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me no drink, no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee, and hungered, or athirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, Verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of the least of these, ye did it not to me. These shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. When I read that passage and thinking about this optional, intentional, automatic, where trying to answer for myself the question, where is compassion in my life? Is it something that I have or don't have. In today's world, there's also a term used that's called empathy, and it's kind of like sympathy, to be able to feel what the other person is feeling. This passage here is sobering because the people in it, on both the right hand and the left hand, hardly seem to know when they were doing the right thing. The others seemed hardly to know when they were omitting what they should have been doing. The reality is, the ones who were commended, the ones who were told, "You did the right thing," actually got it done. And I really believe that they are the people who are sensitive to the needs around them, who are in touch, in tune with the people that God put in front of them. Compassion, is it optional? I would say this: no, it's not optional. At least not if you want to be Christ-like. Christ healed people. Heal everyone? No, he didn't get everyone healed on earth. But when he could, Christ reached out with his hands and was compassionate. Christ helped people. Who deserves our compassion? Basically, I've answered that. 1 Peter 3, 8 and 9 says this, though. Finally, this is the end of a letter by this apostle Peter. Finally, be ye all of one mind, having compassion one of another. Love as brethren. Be pitiful. Be courteous. Not rendering evil for evil or railing for railing, but contrawise blessing. Knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing. Who deserves our compassion? Have compassion one of another. Love as brethren. Be pitiful. Be courteous. The challenge, that's basically what I have to share here. It was a challenge to me to look at this concept, to go through these passages, these verses. But we have one more little story, one more scene or picture I want to paint for you before we close here. And it's Jesus. It's Jesus and in a compassionate move that he made. But he didn't do it in person. The story would be this. After Christ died, Jesus was denied by Peter, the disciples all left, tried, eventually hung on a cross, and crucified. The soldiers doing their job, breaking the legs, cleaning up this mess. The body is taken away and put in a tomb. 2 days later, Easter morning, what we call Easter morning, the morning that it was discovered that Christ had risen from the dead, these three women were in a garden. And there was an angel there. They were looking for Jesus, and he was gone. And there was an angel there that said, I failed to write down the exact reference here. the angel's message to Mary was, go tell the disciples that I'm alive. And Peter. It's going to be interesting. It wasn't my find. I read this in an article. But go tell the disciples and Peter. Why and Peter of all things? Peter was simply one of the 12, one of the disciples. Why was he singled out from the rest? Was he better? No, actually, if anything, Peter could have been called a little worse. He was the one who had made the loud statements that I'll be right here, I'll be beside you, doesn't matter what. He denied his Lord three times. He denied his Lord with oaths. And logic and the way humans work, we can understand that Peter was probably feeling really bad. He was probably feeling cast down, faint, as one without a shepherd, the same terms that we find in Matthew 9. Heart sick. And Jesus knew that. Jesus knew that full well. And Jesus, from his resurrected, from his disappeared state, sent a message back to Peter. A special word of comfort. For we have not an high priest that can't be touched with the feelings of our infirmities. He was tempted like we are, yet without sin. So my challenge for you is, the challenge that I take for myself is to be Christ-like, be compassionate, take note of needs. May the Lord bless you. Let's have us all.